All right, all right. So it's your girl Reason to Smile today, and I'm back for episode 2. So hopefully at this point you have listened to the intro. It's 10 minutes. I don't even think it's 10 minutes. I think it's more like 9 minutes. So it's not too long to just learn a little bit about me, learn about my goal, what I'm hoping to get accomplished with this podcast, and just a little bit more background. So today, this is officially my very first actual podcast on a topic, and thinking through what I wanted to talk about, I really wanted to talk about something that was near and dear to my heart, something that I'm actively going through and something I'm engaged in. And one of the main reasons I wanted to do this podcast, as I talked about on the intro, was I really wanted to share. I think there's lots of things that we're going through and that we think we're alone in, but little do we realize that there are so many people, not just in the world, but so many people in our backyard that are going through the same thing. And for me and for today's topic, it's going to be about fertility and having babies and expanding your family and becoming a mother, becoming a father. And that's a topic that has gained a lot of exposure, especially most recently. And I see more and more people opening up, which I think is awesome. So kudos. And I definitely want to encourage people to continue to be transparent. And I want to encourage those that are listening to continue to give those of us who are being transparent and sharing our stories, whatever it is, whether it's fertility or some other topic, to give us grace, as these experiences are very emotional. It's a roller coaster, and I'm going to talk about some of that. But not just fertility, about anything. That is just very much needed. But today's topic and what I want to talk to you is about infertility. So what exactly is infertility? What does that mean? So it's defined as trying to conceive for at least a year and not being successful. So trying to get pregnant for at least a year and not getting pregnant. Now, if you are over the age of 35, 35 is a big, important milestone in the fertility journey and in a woman's body. At 35, it's a major speed bump and the definition changes. So if you are over 35 and you have been trying to conceive for 6 months and have been unsuccessful, then you are considered infertile. And so 35 is huge. I actually got pregnant at 34 with my first son and was shocked when I was told that I was considered a geriatric pregnancy. That just threw me through a whole loop, but we'll talk about that later. So you know what the definition is, trying to conceive for either a year or 6 months if you're over 35 and being unsuccessful. So I struggled with that. We have a son, he's 3 years old. He's the biggest blessing in our lives and we are so thankful for him. And we decided we wanted to have another. Not because I wanted a baby and I miss those sweet baby coos and those baby smells, which I definitely do. But really, we decided we wanted to have another because we didn't want our son to go through life without a built-in number two, without having someone to go through life with and to weather the ups and to downs. And that's a sibling. I come from a family where I'm the oldest of six. And growing up, I had no idea that having such a large family was such a blessing. Being the oldest, I didn't have the perspective to see it. I thought every new sibling that came was taking something away from me, was taking attention away from my parents, was taking money that they could spend on me, was taking time. And I wasn't happy about having more siblings, to be quite honest. And as I've gotten into my adulthood and I have become adults and my siblings have become adults, and I've gone through some life experiences, such as losing both of my parents, I have learned that it is such a blessing to have other people to go through life with. Do they get on your nerves? Yes. Do you want to kill each other at times? Yes. Do you argue? Do you fight? Yes. But there's no one who knows you your whole life and knows your upbringing and knows who you are so intimately and thoroughly as a sibling. And we want that for our son. My husband is actually an only child, and I used to think only children, you know, they were the bee's knees. They had it all. And I think it may be that way when you're younger, especially if you're an only child and maybe even only grandchild. You are just the apple of so many people's eye, and you get all of the attention from not only your parents, but also from your grandparents, for aunts and uncles. Well, I guess in that situation, maybe you don't have an aunts and uncles, but on the other side, and you're just, you get everything. But then there comes a point in your life where things happen. Maybe your parents pass away, or a parent becomes ill, or someone suffers a hardship, and you're the only one. You're the main source of comfort, main source of protection, and just the main source. And that is such a stressful time. So, I want our son to have siblings, at least one. So this is not a selfish reason. I actually think it's really unselfish to want to be able to expand our family for him. And I'm really proud of that. And so right after we got married in April of 2019, we started trying to have another. We hadn't tried for our first, so we thought it would be no problem. Like, you know, our son came, wasn't expecting him. And I'll just kind of sidebar and just talk about that glorious story. Our son was actually conceived the night my husband proposed to me. He proposed to us, to me at a Transformer convention, because he's a Transformer collector, in Washington, D.C. And we conceived my son that weekend. Had no idea. And it's been such a blessing. And then here we are, we got married and wanted to have another. And we're trying and trying and trying, and nothing was happening. And so we were like, what in the world? Never thought I would really struggle with this, since we had gotten pregnant before. I had not been pregnant before that, so this was my very first pregnancy. I had always wondered, you know, if there was something wrong with me in regards to reproduction, because I hadn't gotten pregnant. Never had tried to become pregnant, but let's just, you know, be honest. Things happen, and we're adults, and there was definitely unprotected sex, and never resulted in a kid. So when I got pregnant, I thought, oh, well, look, it actually does work, you know, and was so happy. And then here I am. Now I'm married. I'm in what is the right way to do it, you know, the way God intended us for us to do. And we're trying to have another, and it's not happening. And I had no idea how common it is to have these struggles. So if you look online, you'll find 1 in 7 or 1 in 8 people, women, struggle or are deemed infertile. So 1 in 7 is not a lot of people, right? Like if you just picture a brunch, a girl's trip, a whatever, a wedding party, one of those people is not going to be able to have a child. And that is a huge number. And people just don't talk about it. There's a lot of negative stigma that goes along with this. There's a lot of blame and guilt that women put on themselves. And I know that firsthand. And it's something that we lock away in our innermost secrets and we don't share. And, you know, if you don't want to share, that's fine. I completely understand. But for me, that not sharing was crippling in a sense. I felt alone. I felt like I couldn't be myself, because I am a very outspoken, I'm definitely not an introvert. I'm an extrovert. I love people. I'm a huge personality. And to me, sharing is really therapeutic, and it's something I need. And so I learned quite early that I wanted to share parts of this. And for those of you guys who may follow me on social media, you may know part of our story because we've shared part of it, but never kind of like the back history of it and kind of how it started. So as I talked about, got married in April of 2019, tried to have a kid for 6 to 8 months. It wasn't happening. Was even doing ovulation kits to find out when I was ovulating, which means you purchase them the same way you could get a pregnancy kit online or in a Target or Walgreens. You basically pee on the stick right around day 14 of your cycle and look for a smiley face. And when you get the smiley face, you and your partner get it on in hopes of getting pregnant. And so did that for several months. And that in and of itself was so stressful, right? Knowing that I'm ovulating was like, okay, well, we have to have sex tonight. And if there's ever something that's a mood killer, it's saying, oh, I have to have sex tonight. So not having that spontaneity, not having that desire, but more so it becoming a chore. That's hard. That's hard for the female, definitely hard for the male. And we experienced that quite early on because we were doing what they would refer to as timed sex, timed intercourse. So went to my regular OB-GYN and explained that I had been trying and wasn't being successful. And based off of my age, she immediately started me on what would be considered medicated time intercourse. So she prescribed to me a hormone, a drug called Clomid, excuse me, and I took that for 3 months. So the first month took the prescription, I can't remember, it was on the lower side of the dose, timed intercourse again, doing the ovulation, getting the smiley face, okay, let's have sex the next couple of days. And then waiting the 2 weeks to see, to take a pregnancy test to see if I got a positive, getting the negative, and then eventually getting your period. Just the roller coaster that is. For anyone going through it, I know you know exactly what I'm talking about. You get the smiley face, you put on your big girl boots, you do the fun stuff with your husband, which at some point it's not as fun as it should be because it's timed and a requirement. And then you're so positive and you're just looking forward to a positive pregnancy test, and then you get a negative. It's heartbreaking. And to face that month after month is like continuing to crash your car into a wall month after month after month. So did that for 3 months, was unsuccessful. Doctor said, well, let's try you on a different medication. Let's try letrozole. So switched to a completely different medication, tried that for another 3 months. Same process, taking the medication, ovulation, timed intercourse, negative test, period, just a wide range of emotions. So at this point, my normal OBGYN was like, this requires something that's outside of my scope, outside of my skill set, and I need to refer you to an infertility specialist or endocrinologist that focuses on these. And so I was referred to one of the local clinics here in Atlanta and started seeing a fertility specialist. So the beginning of that was really a lot of workups, like family history. Have you been pregnant before? Have you delivered before? What are your periods like? Do any of your family members struggle with this? And I'll just pause here. I'm the oldest of six. My mom didn't struggle at all. She had more pregnancies than six. She had a couple of miscarriages. And so I thought I had those same genes and wouldn't have any trouble. My sister, who's actually younger, has three. And she didn't have any struggles. And I didn't see any reason why I would struggle. But needless to say, here I am. And I've struggled. And so doing the family history, getting all that information, and then the treatment plan that we decided on was to do IUIs. And so an IUI is an intrauterine insemination. It's what you think of back in the day, like an artificial insemination, which a lot of people would think about with same-sex couples, for example. Might even poke some fun with the turkey baster. And I'm not gonna lie, I have my own turkey baster story, but we'll get into that later. So the doctor prescribed medication. So again, taking a hormone to get me to ovulate and to ensure I was ovulating, which I never had a reason to think I wasn't ovulating. Another part of this fertility is that you get tested all the time. You get tested the beginning of your cycle, mid-cycle, end of cycle. As your hormone levels and your lining of your uterus are supposed to be at different levels, they pretty much know. Never didn't think I wasn't ovulating because I was getting the positive ovulation. Smiley faces, which means your body is emitting the hormones. I think it's the LH, the hormone. And so never thought that was my struggle, but still. So the doctor put me on this medication, which is a hormone, which means, as you can imagine, and women are hormonal, my hormones are fluctuating, which means I could be a little off the rails, a little more sensitive, a little bit more irritable, a little whatever. And so started taking the medicine and then doing what they would call the IUI. And so what that means is that your partner goes in and leaves a sample. Kind of what you think about, you know, on the TV shows where you go into an office and there's some porn or some magazines. And maybe I'll have my husband on to kind of give his side of the story. And you give them a semen sample. You ejaculate into a cup. And then what they do is they take that sperm and they wash it. not, you know, not what we think about with Dawn soap or Cascade. But what they're trying to do is to clean out the slow guys and get the most modal, most mobile sperm, the good ones that look good, because the shape of sperm matters. You learn so much about this, and there's so much about a woman's body and about reproduction that a typical person will have no idea because they have no struggles and don't need to know. And don't, so many women I talk to don't even fully understand like their menstrual cycle and what's actually happening each month. And I've learned so much about all of this. I will definitely share. So we started with IUIs and did several of those. I think we did two or three when something actually came up on the third one that there was a problem with the sperm sample. So up until this point, we hadn't had any issues. And part of the kind of pre-work process that you go through is that they do a lot of testing, and my husband's sperm didn't have any issues, meaning wasn't like the sperm count was low, which some people suffer from, wasn't like the mobility or motility was low, meaning the shape or the speed or any of that stuff. So come to find out that my husband had actually been on a medication, on a steroid medication for something else, and that impacts your sperm quality, which we had no idea. We had told the doctor about, and I guess she didn't know, or I'm not quite sure. We actually ended up switching doctors, and this was part of a reason of it. So basically wasted a whole cycle because we couldn't do anything at that point just because the sample was not where it needed to be. So took a couple months off, and my husband took supplements to get his sperm quality back up to what it needed to be, and had to see a specialist. And truthfully, as soon as he stopped taking the steroid, it went right back to what it was and right back to where it needed to be, which was, we're very thankful for. There was not any issue with his body. It was working properly. It was just that the medication he was on at the time was affecting it. So we started back up, and we did, in total, we did a total of 5 IUIs. So he goes in, he leaves the sample, they wash it, I'm on medication, I come in that afternoon, and they basically take a small catheter and inject his sperm inside of me. So it's like giving the sperm somewhat of a head start, right? So like if they're starting coming out of the penis inside of the vagina, they have to travel all the way up and meet the egg that has been released from the which has been released from the, can't even think of it right now, traveling into the fallopian tubes. And then we'll hopefully meet the sperm, implant into your uterus, live there for 9 months, and be all happy dandy. But that's on ground zero. In the IUI, it's starting further up in the process to where it doesn't have to swim as far, which means it can also avoid some of the things that could like stop it from finding the egg, like cervical mucus, which I learned about, which is a thing. So some women could have thick, or I'm not going to call it toxic, but some sort of mucus that keeps the sperm from actually reaching the egg. So IUI would combat that because it's already inside of the uterus and one step closer to the egg. And so we did that, unsuccessful. Again, the roller coaster of the ups and the downs and the hormones. And this costs money too at the same time. So like each IUI out of pocket was about $2,000 because our particular medical insurance doesn't have any fertility coverage. We were out of pocket. Now some companies, and a lot more companies do, and some states would actually do require that companies do it. But here in Georgia is not one of those. The company which I work for does not have any coverage. So each time we did those, and I said, you know, we did 5 of those, it was $2,000 a pop. And that seems like a lot, but wait till you continue to hear the story. So we're unsuccessful there. At the same time, I was really considering, is this the right fit with the doctor? Because the doctor, I felt like, wasn't giving me all the information I needed to make informed decisions. And wasn't showing me the TLC that I felt like we needed. And one of the prime examples was about the sperm. She had known that my husband was on that steroid and never brought up the fact that we should probably pause until he's off the medication, so that we're not wasting our time, our money, our efforts, and putting our hopes and dreams into something that most likely would not be successful. So was very torn, as this is an emotional process. So I spoke to the doctor and I told her all of my concerns and the fact that I was unhappy. There were a couple of instances where I was also unhappy with her medical staff. When you're going through this process with fertility doctors, a lot of times you deal with the staff, so deal with their nurses versus actually them. And I felt like their nurses had dropped the ball a couple times. Specifically, after one IUI, one nurse gave me one set of instructions, and then the other nurse gave me another set, and they were conflicting. And when I brought that to their attention, the nurse was like, well, you can really do either, you choose. And I'm like, well, I'm not a medical expert. I didn't go to medical school. I have no training in this. Obviously, I'm going through the process, so I'm informed, and I like to think I'm pretty thorough, so I learned a lot of this, but you shouldn't be giving me that. You should be giving me all of the information and helping to guide those decisions. So I didn't like that. I didn't like the part about not knowing about the steroids. And then there was one other thing which I didn't like, which I can't think of right now. And so I brought those to her attention and had a conversation, and she basically told me, I don't even think she said, I'm sorry you feel that way, but basically was like, it is what it is. And didn't address any of my concerns. So at that point I knew we needed to switch, either doctors or switch to a completely different clinic. And so we decided that we wanted to switch to a completely different clinic. At this point, we had decided when we started the process, we were only going to do 6 IUIs. And 3 to 6 is kind of generally what they say to do. If you're not pregnant by the 6th IUI, it's most likely not going to happen that way. There's something else going on in your body that requires a deeper level of intervention to get you pregnant. And if you continue to do IUIs, you're most likely wasting your time and your effort. So we knew we weren't going to do more than 6. So at this point, we decided that we were going to move from IUI and move on to IVF, which is what a lot of people know when they think of fertility, and that's in vitro fertilization. And so we decided that we, at the same time, we were going to switch doctors. And there was another reproductive specialist in the Atlanta area that was very well known, that had a great reputation. The clinic had really high success rates because you can find all of this information online. The CDC requires that they report like the number of live births, number of pregnancies, so you can see their success rates. And so decided that we wanted to go to this new doctor at this new clinic. Well, unfortunately, the doctor is really, really popular. And this is also during the time of COVID when everything was a lot slower. And so we had a long wait until we could actually have our first virtual appointment with her. And so we decided that that's what we were going to do. And so we waited several months and then we had our first virtual appointment with her. She got all of our medical history from our previous doctor in the previous office. Did her own testing to see all of our different hormone levels, the semen analysis, all of these different things. And then her conclusion was just like we thought it would be, is that it was time for us to do IVF and that IUIs were not going to be successful as the 5 or 6, I can't even remember at this point, we had done previously, had not been. There was literally no reason why we should continue down that path. So at that point, it was like, okay, great. We know what we need to do. We're at a place where we have a new doctor. We're excited about it. We want to move forward. Also at this point, had been reading a lot of information, listening to different podcasts, different books. You know, It Starts With the Egg is one that's popular. Trying to learn more about not just my body and the process, but a lot of it mentally too. So a lot of Christian-based books on what does the Bible say? I am a Christian and a believer in God. And what does the Bible say? What does God say about producing and about starting a family? So I read a lot about different supplements that you can take and things that you should be doing from a diet, from an exercise, so many things. It's really overwhelming. So started taking some of the supplements that they say to take, both for me as well as for my husband. One of the popular ones, telling you to start on a prenatal like right away. So the whole entire time I've been doing all of this, taking prenatals, making sure all my levels are good just from a normal standpoint, from like a normal physical. So I'm anemic, taking iron, taking B12, D3, CoQ10 is a huge one as it relates to egg quality. DHEA is another one. Lots of different supplements. So when you talk about all of the pills and all of the different things, that also is a big factor. And it's, that part isn't overwhelming, but it's still another thing you need to do. And it's a lot of pills. So started taking all of that and learning what our options were for IVF. Because again, not having fertility coverage, needed to go through, well, what was the expense of it? So learned a lot, went through the different options with a financial counselor at the new doctor's office. And they had a program which we originally wanted to apply for, which was kind of like, do the IVF. If you're not successful, we'll give you your money back, or at least a portion of your money back. So that seemed like the safe option for us. So started the testing for that because they require you hit certain levels. Lo and behold, we could not do that program because one of the factors they look at is your AMH, which is an indicator of your egg reserve. Mine was not high enough. So although it was exactly where it should be for my age, it was not high enough for this to qualify for that program. And so this is just like Vegas odds, right? They look at the success and make a determination and basically bet against it. So what it's saying is that at my age, I'm not bettable to get pregnant at a high enough rate that they feel like they could bank on me, which is the whole thing in and of itself. So that was unfortunate because we were hoping to do that program, but completely understood. And so the other option they had was kind of like a BOGO in a sense, buy one, get one, in that it's a multi-cycle program because there's lots of people who need more than one cycle of IVF. And I'll explain at some point what a cycle means. And in this program, you pay a higher fee, but if you're not successful the first round, you get a second round. And so, because in looking at the statistics that are available, because the CDC requires it, we knew that majority of people needed more than one round to be successful. So we decided that that probably was the best option for us because you're paying more. Should you become pregnant that first round, you have in fact overpaid. But if there's something that you would be willing to overpay for, what would be greater than actual having a baby, right? Like that's the one thing you're not going to be like, I want to take this back. I overpaid. I don't see the value. So we knew we'd be okay if we got pregnant the first round. And if we didn't get pregnant the first round, we knew we had the safety net of multiple rounds. And so we decided that was the program we wanted to do. And so one of the things you have to do before they'll even do anything is pay for it. And like I said, this is expensive. So to do that program was out of pocket $27,000. So you're talking a literal car out of pocket that needs to be paid for. And people do lots of different things to pay for it. You know, people save for long periods of time. Some people put it on credit cards. Some people refinance their house. Some people do GoFundMes. Some people get second jobs that offer fertility coverage. Starbucks, for example, is well known for giving fertility coverage to part-time employees. And so they get a part-time job at Starbucks to be able to fulfill their dream because this is a huge amount of money. And as I'll talk about, that 27 grand is not everything we had to pay for. And this is on top of what we've already come out of pocket for the previous IUIs and everything we've done previously, which is probably in the $12,000 to $15,000 out of pocket. So we've already spent that in the last, let's call it year to 18 months. And now we're saying we have to pay $27,000. So that's a big pill to swallow, as you can imagine. Even having it, you know, you don't think you need to spend that to be able to have a baby, right? That was something that you were going to do something else. That was like a safety net. That was a, we're going to buy a new house and that's a down payment. That's a new car. That's a college tuition fund. That's a cocaine and strippers. I mean, I don't care what you want to spend it on, but you probably don't think that you're going to have to spend it on having a baby and expanding your family. But for us, that's what we had to do. So we did it. So we signed up for that program and started the process. And quickly realized that the process was super intense. Not that we didn't have a good outlook or idea of what it was going to entail, because they give you lots of information. But unfortunately, one of the downsides is that you never know enough. Like, there's always something more that you need to learn. And the more I go through this process and the more I learn, it's just so complex. And so based off of the timing, I don't want to go into the specifics of IVF just yet. I want to save that and do this as kind of a part two, as we've gone through our first round of IVF, and I can get into more specifics about that. But just wanted to kind of talk about fertility, the beginning steps of our journey, the IUIs, the time intercourse, and where that got us to today. So I will kick up with part two in with the next week's session, and we'll get into more details about the first round and where we are today, and I'll continue to share. Sorry about that. Talking for 30 minutes, I guess my voice gets kind of dry. Let me sip some water. So I'll kick it back off next week and I'll get into the specifics of IVF. The great thing is I have started to share my journey and been very transparent. And those of you guys who have heard about it have been so supportive, from the people who have written me, you know, instant messages, the people who have DM'd me, to text me, to call me. So many individuals have shared their stories. I have learned so much from them, both in a let me help you and share what I know, and then people who have gone through a different version of this same struggle. There's so many things that women are going through, and there's women who have shared it openly and have posted about it, and then there's women who have said, I can't share this, I'm not ready to share this, and have sent me a private message. And there's been men too, men who have been spouses and partners of other of people who have gone through this and gone through this themselves and encouraged me. And it's so helpful, because this process is literally a roller coaster. It's not easy. Outside of losing my parents, this is definitely the hardest thing I've been through. And I'll talk more about it on the next podcast, but it's emotional, it's physical, as you're taking pills and injections and changing your body's chemistry and hormones. It's financial, mental, like the stigma and the guilt of, why can my body not do this? Like, why am I not able to do something that women are supposed to be able to do? What my sister is able to do, what my mom was able to do, what my friends are able to do, what crackheads are able to do, people who don't want babies are able to do, but yet my body for some reason can't do its most basic function. And it takes away, it begins to eat at you, and you get into these what ifs and you get into these doubts, and it's a really dark place to go to. And I've been there, and I'm not going to say that I'm completely, you know, on the other side. I have my struggles. And I have my struggles very recently. If you know me, I'm a particularly positive person, but it's hard to be positive during this process. And I continue to push forward, and I continue to believe in God, and I continue to have positive affirmations and manifest what I'm looking for and what I believe in. But I have my tough days, and the people who are on this journey with me have been so great. Not just from the people who are my friends and my family who know about it, but like I said, the people who encourage, have whole support systems of people, whether it be from college, that I've recently connected with, who are going through the same journey, and we can talk to each other and share our experiences, to other girlfriends. And it's just been amazing. So I want to thank you guys for all of that. And then we'll get into a little deeper about the IVF story, and where we are in that process on our next episode. But thank you guys for listening. This is actually my first official podcast, as the first one was just an intro into what we're going to be talking about. So I just really am thankful that you guys are on this journey with me. Thank you guys for listening. And as I'd like to close out, let's be someone's reason to smile today. Thank you guys.